March 26th, 2024. This one is called Lymphomaniac. Greetings, everybody. Happy spring. So for today, I want to talk about the ever-important lymph system, which really doesn't get the buzz that it deserves. Western medicine typically focuses just on the blood, which of course is important, but the lymph is extremely, extremely important. So this is going to be a little broadcast about lymph and the meaning of the word lymph, some symptoms that maybe your lymph could be congested, ways to go about treating it, things to eat, things not to eat, and how this culture that we're living in, or culture that we're living in, is setting us up for lymph congestion, qi stagnation, yin deficiency, all different types of deficiencies and toxicities, and having stagnant lymph just is one of those side effects. So first, what is the meaning of the word lymph, you might ask yourself? So how did lymph get its name? Lympha, L-Y-M-P-H-A, means water in Greek. It's the perfect word to illustrate the ancient beauty and mechanics of this system. Lymph is the fluid that bathes every cell and gives your body its innate ability to heal itself. So if we've got an issue with our lymph, how are we going to be able to do the miraculous self-healing that the body is capable of? Not too well. Closely associated with the word nymph, a spirit that preserved the rivers and springs for purification in ancient Greece, Lympha was also an ancient Roman agricultural deity embodying the divine aspects of water. The word was later used as a noun to represent a source of fresh water. That's why it's referred to as your lymphatic aquarium of health. So there we are. It comes from the Greek goddess Lympha, who was a nymph, I guess. That's why I did a little play on words calling the show Lymphomaniac, like the word nymphomaniac. So a little bit more about that Greek goddess. In the realm of ancient Roman mythology, the Lympha, or plural the Lymphae, stand as a revered deity associated with the life-giving essence of fresh water. Among the 12 agricultural deities listed by Varro as esteemed, quote, leaders of Roman farmers, the Lymphae held a prominent role, for it was widely recognized that without water, agricultural endeavors would wither and bear meager fruit. The god Lymphae often finds connection with fauns, a god symbolizing fountains and wellheads, thus representing the fundamental sources of water. As elucidated by Michael Lipka's conceptual approach to the Roman deities, the Lympha personifies the functional significance of fresh water, or more broadly, the vital essence of moisture itself. So we can see how this culture, it's so dry, the culture that we live in. It makes people yin deficient. They burn out, right? And I'm thinking of burnout, yin deficiency, the adrenals, the kidneys, copper toxicity, vitamin A toxicity, tying it all together, and the system of the lymph can express itself with symptoms when all of this is basically foisted upon one person, or, you know, all of us, essentially. So now let's talk about some symptoms of lymph congestion, lymphatic congestion. And of course, these symptoms could also be symptoms of estrogen issues, liver issues, other issues with the kidneys, the adrenals, issues with, you know, let's say low progesterone, low testosterone. A lot of things can kind of fall into the same category. Copper toxicity, hypervitaminosis A. There are so many things, but we're going to just talk about it from the context of lymphatic congestion, but always remember that it's more than just one thing, and the body works together, of course, as a circuit. The body is not compartmentalized, isn't just ever one problem. So for example, if someone has, let's say, fatty liver or liver congestion or lymph congestion, isn't just one aspect of the body. That's just what the diagnostic is saying about it. Okay, so some signs of lymphatic congestion. Acne and skin breakouts, so skin issues. And of course, for those of us who know anything about toxic bile theory, that when the liver and the kidneys are overwhelmed and cannot detoxify these toxins, it comes out in the skin. And of course, the answer is not using all of these you know, prescriptions or OTCs, especially something like Accutane, which is so damaging to people, especially in the sexual or the reproductive context. But that's just one sign of lymphatic congestion, is acne and skin breakouts. Allergies, bloating, and water retention. Of course, that's tied to the liver and having ill digestion. Blood clots, that's a big sign of lymphatic congestion. Things like deep vein thrombosis, even things like having high platelets are all signs of lymphatic congestion. Brain fog, which seems to be an epidemic thing. Even younger people are dealing with heaps of brain fog. That's a sign that their lymph or water system is congested. Bronchitis, a lot of respiratory issues, of course, from people not really learning how to breathe, or even in the context of talking about toxicity from things like vitamin A, that can really cause a lot of respiratory issues from people. So it may not be just that the person never knew how to breathe or maybe was smoking stuff. That could be part of it, sure, but you could be smoking and having perfect pranayama and perfect breathing, and then someone else who's just toxic, who's never done any of those things, is manifesting all of these respiratory systems, or symptoms rather. Chemical pollutants, of course, that will always cause issues. Chronic earaches and clogged ears. Constipation, that's a big one. It's really important to use the loo, like minimum once per day, if not more. And there's a bunch of hoaxological rhetoric going on, especially with like the primal diet and with some of these carnivorous diets, which tend to be very low in fiber, both insoluble and soluble, telling people it's okay to use the loo for number two, like twice a week. That is a serious issue. That means you're reabsorbing all of those toxins, all of those used hormones. It's so important to use the bathroom, like I said, at least once a day. Hopefully in the morning, that's like the natural time according to the Qi life cycle or circadian rhythm. And it's also important to get out all of it at once. Like going a few times is not as optimal. And I know oftentimes something like magnesium is recommended for for constipation, but something that's been overlooked in a lot of communities and even in the alt mainstream, which is basically just conventional medicine. So much of it is just masquerading as holistic, but it's so allopathic and it's so easy to see after you've gone through all these iterations like I have and many of you listening have. But potassium cannot be underestimated. The RDA on potassium is 4,700 milligrams. So just for an idea, a banana has 500 milligrams. I think about 8 ounces of coconut water or so is about 20% of one's RDA. There's a bit in potatoes and other types of mostly plant foods. There is some in fish like cod, but it's mostly found in the vegetable, in plant kingdom. So something you might want to think about if you're dealing with constipation or you just want to increase your detox, especially if you're dealing with copper toxicity or hypervitaminosis A, like I assume many of us are, but just don't even know we are. Potassium can be very, very helpful. There's many types out there. I like potassium gluconate, something to look into, of course, if you're just thinking about detoxification and just feeling good. Like someone may go to like the doctor because they're having like, let's say, heart palpitations. And the doctor says, oh, you're just getting older, which of course is not the correct answer. That's because they don't know anything. Or maybe the person's drinking too much coffee or caffeine, because of course that depletes all of our minerals. Like it's been said, I've been reading about this lately and more in the context of coffee, but all caffeine, that could deplete like 80% of your minerals that you're taking in for the day. So you really have to think about the decisions that you're making throughout the day and how they're actually, feeding your body, feeding your soul, feeding you on this deep level. But something like heart palpitations or even like restless leg syndrome or feeling like fatigued after meals, these are all signs of low potassium. Other signs of lymphatic congestion, having a cut that heals slowly. Of course, that also plays into zinc deficiency. Copper toxicity is essentially zinc deficiency, and of course, more. Being dehydrated, that's a sign of lymphatic congestion, also a sign of yin deficiency, also a sign of copper toxicity. Difficulty losing weight, losing the libs, of course, that could be a sign of lymph congestion. It could also be a sign of copper toxicity. Hypervitaminosis A, eating too much food, having an ill circadian rhythm, eating the wrong food, eating foods that we actually have sensitivities or allergy to, and actually we crave those foods sometimes. Crazy stuff. Digestive issues, of course, because if our flow of water, our water system in the body is obfuscated, of course, digestive issues are going to occur. Things like edema, that's swelling, that's also tied to estrogen, copper toxicity, having enlarged lymph nodes, and lymph typically, you know, the big areas around the breasts and the armpits, the groin, under the sides of the neck, like around the jaw. I mean, it's all over the system, but those tend to be the ones that get the most inflamed. Fatigue is also a big hallmark of copper toxicity. In the beginning of copper toxicity, you get this like buzz because copper is like a totally stimulating mineral / heavy metal. And then when that buzzy feeling wears off, when the adrenals have been whipped and whipped and whipped, then the fatigue sets in. Buy now, pay later. Fibroids and cysts, they say, of course, in TCM, this is a sign of blood stagnation, ki stagnation, estrogen dominance. There's also a huge correlation between zinc deficiency, hypervitaminosis A, and copper toxicity when it comes to fibroids and cysts. Headaches, of course, are a sign of toxicity, bile issues, lymphatic congestion, any type of hormone imbalance, including high cortisol or low cortisol, premenstrual symptoms, perimenopausal symptoms, menopausal symptoms, all congested lymph. And of course, you can imagine that those go hand in hand with the toxicities of A and copper, not getting enough fiber, yin deficiency, ki stagnation, inflamed tonsils, itchy skin, rashes, and eczema, kidney dis-ease, lymphedema, that's just swollen lymph. It's a pretty intense disease. Muscle stiffness, joint pain, arthritis, not signs of getting older, signs of lymphatic congestion. Obesity, of course, that's an obvious lymphatic congestion issue. Pain or discomfort whilst exercising, also lymphatic congestion. Puffiness in the face or neck, lymphatic congestion, also thyroid issues, high copper, high A, high estrogen, low progesterone, etc. Scar tissue, lymphatic congestion. Sinus congestion and infections, lymphatic congestion, a sore throat. And just a few more. Stress, of course. Stress is a sign of lymphatic congestion. Stress will cause lymphatic congestion. It works both ways. Swelling of the joints, swelling of extremities on airplanes, and upper respiratory issues. So you've probably dealt with at least one of these in your life. Maybe you're dealing with more than one of these right now, but just know that it's impeding your lymphatic system. In order for your body to heal, you have to get the flow of water. You have to get the flow of ki, of prana, mitochondria, vril, moving quite nicely in your body. So what are some things we can do for treatment besides food? We'll talk about food in a bit, but let's just talk about self-care. And the majority of these things can be done at home, which is fantastic. So something like a bath, if you have access to a bath. If you don't have access to a bath, you can do a foot bath. Anything infrared, like you can do an infrared mat if you have that. Infrared sauna. Sauna is probably one of the greatest things for ki stagnation, for lymphatic congestion. Really a great investment if it's something that you have your eye on. I would highly suggest getting a sauna. Doing jade rolling or gua sha. This is typically done with either like a jade roller made of the stone jade, which is a very hard stone. It has a long-standing reputation in China. Or you can use a gua sha. It looks kind of like a little scraper type of thing. You can get them made in horn. You can also get them made in different types of crystals, jade as well, or something called a bian stone, which is an ancient stone that has a composite of many different minerals and crystals, I believe, that's also part of the ancient Chinese tradition. And a lot of these things, I talked about gua sha and some of these things in a prior show I did about the Chinese modalities or the ancient TCM modalities that are healing. And a lot of these were on this list. And this is, of course, before the advent of acupuncture and needling, which I think is more on the allopathic vein, if you will. Doing face masks, that can help too. Try one that works for your skin. Some of them can be extremely drying, and obviously I think goes without saying, but I'll say it anyway, you want to avoid skincare that has retinol or retin A, which basically peels the skin off, sometimes called a yellow peel. That's vitamin A. So yeah, dry brushing is great. Not good to do when you get out of the sauna because you're going to be like sweaty and wet and it can like tug on your skin. But other times it's really good way to stimulate lymphatic flow is to dry brush. Cupping, that's an ancient Chinese modality, using cups to create like a suction on the skin. And when you take the cup off, like let's say you're doing your back, you will see the areas that have like a darker purplish like color to them because the blood rose to the surface. Those are the areas where there's more stagnation. This list says castor oil packs, but I'm no longer a fan of those. I'm no longer doing them myself. It's one of those things that it's really not proven. Can you get results from doing them? Yeah, you can get results from doing a lot of things, right? But with castor oil, the way it works is that the toxicity it's pulling out of said area is just going somewhere else. I see it very analogous to something like chelation therapy, which is wholly allopathic, where the toxicity or heavy metals, etc., is pulled out of one area and then it just goes somewhere else in the body. So that just seems really redundant to me. Plus, they're so messy. I just find them just a bore and an annoyance to do. Things like dry brushing and gua sha and sauna, those are like neat and fun to do. Hydration, obviously. There's been a lot of press through these ancestral realms that we should be drinking less water and getting all of our fluids from, you know, other things like broth and milk and, I don't know, whatever people are drinking, juice and stuff. And, you know, some of those can be okay. I'm not big of a fan of the milk and the juice too much anymore. Broth, depending on how it's made. A meat broth, of course, is a better option than a bone broth because that can have heavy metals and things that we don't want in our body, things that we're trying to get out by doing this. But I think what people fail to recognize in that situation is that we live in a very dry environment. We have the EMF. We have, all the chemtrails and stuff like that. So we live in a very yin deficient environment. So we need a lot of water. And especially if we want to have good bile flow, water is essential for bile flow. Now, of course, don't drink cold water and don't drink water with your meals. But if you can just have good quality filtered water, and I don't recommend distilled, I don't recommend putting mineral drops in your water, just good RO, reverse osmosis, filtered water, room temp or warm between meals, and a good amount of it. You can add a little bit of lemon to it. That is going to get everything moving. Going for a bike ride, that's another option. Swimming, meditation, reflexology, breath work, Pilates, dancing, rebounding on a trampoline, Tai Chi, walking, weightlifting, yoga. Pretty much a lot of just sporting right there, with the exception of reflexology, meditation, and breath work. So great ideas right there to get your body moving, keep it in motion. Of course, that's really important. And now let's go over some foods that we want to eat and don't want to eat. So in regards to what we want to eat, you can listen back to the last broadcast I did called The Human Antenna. There's a lot of good information on there. We want to be eating protein. You want to be eating protein from muscle meat. I like chicken breast on the bone. I like turkey breast. I like turkey bacon. Just make sure it's a good one and not like a really toxic one in the store. What else do I like? I like beef. I like bison. Those are pretty much the proteins that I like to eat. I really like those a lot. I have no problem eating them on a regular basis. So those are some options there. And on the leaner side is of preference, and we need to eat protein. If we want to detoxify our liver and we want to lose weight, you have to eat protein. It's really important, and it's tasty. So just think about that. Get the best quality that you can afford. And just, yeah, take it from there. Fiber is really important, soluble and insoluble. Find your tolerance. Everyone does different with different types. You may do better with an insoluble one than a soluble one. So figure that out for you. And you don't want to go too intense and try too much of it at once, especially if you're coming from, let's say, a SAD diet or one of these ideas of what is an ancestral diet that tends to be very low in fiber. Like, for example, the carnivore diet has a lot of pluses. I think it's got a lot of things going for it that could be really helpful for people, but it doesn't have a lot of fiber, and that can cause issues with constipation like we talked about earlier. Of course, the nose-to-tail carnivorous people are eating so much vitamin A and so much copper. And it's very interesting that we have people who are following just the muscle meat carnivory, and then people who are doing like the animal-based kind of style, and then people who are doing the nose-to-tail. And it's a very interesting experiment, not kind of a controlled experiment, if you will, but nevertheless very interesting to see how this is going to pan out, you know, years or decades from now. But they really need to do something to get those toxins out. Otherwise, they just keep on recirculating around. And then, I mean, how different is that essentially from someone who's eating the SAD diet, right? And if you have an issue with eating fibrous stuff, well, that's a bile flow and a liver issue, and not eating fiber is just going to suppress that. So take that into consideration when you're thinking about what to eat. What else is on the list? Moderate fats. We want to keep fat on the lower side. Don't have to go zero fat or super low fat. But too many of the popular diets these days are really just swimming in fat. It's far too much for us to deal with, regardless of what quality it is. Even if it's raw, high quality fat, it's still too much fat, and it's too much for the liver to process, especially in this day and age where we're living in a toxic world. That's just the reality of it. It's not to, you know, promote the idea that we're suffering or anything like that. It's just the reality of things. And also, like I alluded to on the human antenna, that high-fat diets raise estrogen. So we don't want to be doing that. I don't think anyone listening wants to raise estrogen. Now, are there certain instances where a woman may not be making enough estradiol during the part in her cycle, like in the follicular phase leading up to ovulation, where she needs to make more estrogen? Yeah, that's a possibility, but that would probably be ameliorated by doing more liver detox to get the flow of the body going than just slapping on more. Less is more. Think about that. We're always told, take this supplement, do this, do that. How about we pull away and do less and think less and use less of our energy for all this outsourcing, and then just use what we have at home and eat more simply, and we'll probably have more money and feel a lot better. Oh, and finally, carbohydrates. Carbohydrates are important. Everyone has a tolerance or a threshold for how many they can eat. Some people do better with carbohydrates from grains and beans. Some do better with carbohydrates from fruits and vegetables. And remember that things like potassium or potassium deficiency can actually make you more sensitive to the effects of carbohydrates. That's why people tend to become diabetic in, like, you know, middle age, what they consider to be middle age. To me, middle age is probably more like 60 or 70. But in the, you know, context of where we're living, most people think middle age is what, like 40, 50, something like that. So at that point in someone's life, their mineral stores are depleted, copper's high, vitamin A is high, there's issues with bile flow, there's a lot of stress, you know, etc. Maybe they've utilized different, you know, substances to take the edge off throughout the years, like the majority of us have. So you really want to think about minerals in regards to getting your carbohydrate tolerance up, and also about bile flow. So now lastly, let's speak about foods to avoid. This is pretty obvious. Basically, any food that promotes inflammation in the body, affects your blood sugar, is low in fiber, can lead to constipation and other inflammatory gut issues. So processed food, obvious, super obvious. The baked goods especially, unless you're really making them yourself and eating them just occasionally, these are not things you want on your regular list of eating. I mean, if you want to look good and feel good in your clothing and out of your clothing, these probably aren't going to be staples in your diet. Maybe you got away with this when you were like in your 20s or something, but now you're probably not going to get away with it. Eating too much fatty meat, that is not good. We just talked about fat. Fat can sometimes help people use the bathroom, but it's not getting to the root cause of the bile issue. And again, I'm not promoting a zero-fat or a low-fat diet. I'm promoting that people don't douse their food in fat. Natural foods already have fat within them. Think about it. Like even something like oatmeal, there's a good amount of fat in oats, right? I mean, we don't think of it that way, but there is. Okay, the next thing would be dairy. I would say to go low on the dairy. I know a lot of these popular diets now are telling people to eat more of it, but I believe it'll raise your estrogen levels. I think it should be kept to a minimum. And I think this is good advice for everybody. In historical times, was it more of a food that European peoples leaned on? Certainly. But it's really a food of famine. And I talked about this on a much, much older show, probably in the 2018 era of that time. It's really a food of famine. It actually changes the facial shape. And if we had meat, we certainly wouldn't be eating as much dairy. So there's people now who are like slamming like a gallon of milk a day or even less. That's not going to end well. And there's also a lot of vitamin A in milk, more so if it's been pasteurized, because then the vitamin A has like mutated into like an even more toxic form of vitamin A. But it's also true of a lot of these, you know, raw milks. Like I remember there was a farm that I used to get food from, which I no longer do. This was during the virus crisis. And their milk was so yellow, like so yellow. We know what that is. It's, quote, grass fed. And what's grass high in? Carotenoids. So then the milk becomes high in retinol, right? Pretty obvious. And then, of course, something like goat milk, which is white. I forget the mechanism as to why it doesn't turn yellow like the cow does. And of course, the molecule is smaller. It's always A2. And people oftentimes think that's better. I was one of those people. But goat milk is even higher in vitamin A, and it's high in copper. So I don't think anyone's doing themselves any favors by doing this, but thinking back to what we talked about in the beginning of this broadcast, I said that, you know, when someone first gets into copper, you know, eating it or, you know, consuming it, there's a buzz effect, right? It's even said that the buzz effect that we get when we smoke marijuana is due to the copper. You know that buzz you get when you get lifted? That's tied to copper. That's that feeling. The buzz we get from chocolate, the buzz we get from nuts, from liver, bee pollen, shellfish, goat milk, you know, all the foods that are high, mushrooms. It's interesting. But then, of course, what happens, that buzz, 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 the adrenals get pummeled and whipped and whipped and whipped, and then eventually go down into the fatigue, right? So think about the dairy thing. Think about using it more as a condiment. I know it's a very emotional food. I know it's a very... it's addictive in a certain way because of the queso morphines. Majority of my life, I've actually been dairy free or low dairy because of the way I was raised. It wasn't something we were raised with. I was raised macrobiotic and it wasn't part of the microbiotic perspective, which I'm thankful for. And then at a certain part in my life, I found the primal diet and, you know, all the ancestral stuff and the pro-metabolic and repeat and all this jazz. And then I got into it, but I can't say my health was better for it. And now I keep it totally minimal. I use a little bit of butter. I try to get the palest butter I can, and I eat a little bit of cheese, and that seems to work for me. But I remember something. This is really just out there thinking back, but there was a time when Ajanus Mandirplanets actually said in one of his books or in one of his chats that he did that dairy was actually a good food for the lymphatic system. Nothing could be further from the truth. It's a good food for cellulite. It's a good food for high estrogen. It's a good food for lowering your sex drive, for gynecomastia. So if those are things that you want, I would suggest high consumption of it. And I would also suggest really not taking the advice from anybody for the majority on places like Instagram or Twitter. Like, there's so much dietary insanity going on in there. It's designed to make people's heads spin. Sugar, of course, this is pretty obvious. Just cut down your consumption of white sugar whenever possible. Try not to add additional sugar to food. If you want some sweetness, you could do maple syrup or honey, but it's still something that some people will struggle with, and eating too much of that, especially if you have like an insulin issue because you have toxicities and low mineral status. Like oftentimes with copper toxicity, there's a massive blood sugar issue, massive, and vitamin A as well, but it's more so. And of course these things go hand in hand. Many people with vitamin A toxicity also have copper toxicity, and keep in mind that it affects women more than men because we have smaller livers and adrenals. We have more estrogen in context. Majority of us have done something in the realm of birth control. I know myself, I was on the birth control pill for about 5 years, a long, long time ago. I did the copper IUD for about 6 months, so it adds up. Gluten, Of course, inflammatory protein found in wheat, barley, and rye. The wheat plant was, of course, hybridized much more so than barley and rye. I'd mentioned this on Telegram, but oftentimes a wheat allergy could be tied to vitamin A toxicity, something to consider right there. And of course, the wheat these days, sadly, has been hybridized, perverted, mutated. It's unfortunate. And then you have things like semolina and einkorn, which are varieties of wheat that are very high in vitamin A, even though they're kind of promoted as being, you know, better or ancient or ancestral or whatever you want to call it. Probably something that most people are going to feel better if they minimize in their diet or if they only eat, let's say, like a sourdough type of thing. I know with myself, I don't do well with baked grains. So anything baked, whether it's gluten-free or not, it doesn't matter. I just don't do well with baked grains. Like if it's a side dish or something and it's soft and it's cooked on top of the stove, it's not an issue. So experiment with yourself and figure out what works for you. But for a lot of people, this can be inflammatory, especially if you're already dealing with toxicities, deficiencies, and lymph congestion. And it does say salt here. I think it's really important to get the right salt. You want to get a sea salt, preferably a white salt. The red salt was a hollow hoax. I fell for it. The red salt, of course, is high in iron oxides. It could be high in copper, all different types of things that we do not want in our body. We all have too many of those things in our bodies already. So you want to get a good white salt. And, you know, use it, season to taste, but remember that salt is just one mineral that our systems need. We also need magnesium. We also need potassium. And if you're hip to a lot of this stuff and you really want to get the toxicities out of your diet, you may want to be looking into a zinc supplementation. Might want to be looking into selenium supplementation, which is really good for thyroid, and a lesser known mineral called molybdenum, which is really good for liver detox. And of course, with the zinc, you may want to start very slow. If you're coming from a place where you did not eat a lot of red meat for a long time, then just by default, you end up kind of being copper toxic, because then everything ends up being more on the copper vein, like people who are doing vegetarianism or pescatarianism or some form of diet that really like isn't very high in zinc. And it's no wonder that they are, you know, always saying all this foul press about meat. And we're talking about red meat, you know, not poultry and things like that. There is some zinc in fowl, mostly in dark meat fowl. But the best source of zinc is in ruminant meat. It's in beef, it's in bison, it is in lamb, but lamb is high in copper. Something to consider. So if you are looking to kind of take detox to the next phase, you really want to think about going slow with the zinc. Otherwise, you'll start to get copper toxicity symptoms as you detox the copper out of your body, or just, you know, kind of get your balance better. And it doesn't feel very good, actually. So that's pretty much all I have to say for this little tidbit, lymphomaniac. We talked about the meaning of the word lymph and its origins with the Greek goddess Lympha or Lymphae. We talked about some of the symptoms of lymph congestion. We talked about some low-cost, at-home self-care treatment modalities, and we talked about what to eat and what not to eat. And just remember, this is part of the larger scheme of things to basically whittle people down, to make them dry, to make them wither, wrinkle, become deficient in the soft juiciness of yin, to become stagnant in qi, so they have no motivation and they're fatigued. And we live in this high copper culture where it over-feminizes men and masculinizes women, because what happens when estrogen is high? We see very clearly, just look around, even in the context of just heteros, you know, or people who aren't trannies, men are looking like women. Women are looking like men. Women are acting like men. Men are acting like women. This is all because of toxicities and deficiencies. And especially when we have this massive snare in the alternative mainstream, which is basically just the conventional space for all intents and purposes, where they're putting out all of these diets that destroy lymph flow. Any diet that's going to be high in vitamin A and high in copper is going to destroy lymph flow, especially if it's high in fat, then it's really going to be a doozy. I mean, these diets these days, it's almost like they rubbed their hands together and concocted like the worst possible sequence of food to cause the most amount of damage, and then told us it was going to stimulate our metabolism, detoxify estrogen, lower serotonin. It was a hoax. unfortunately. So I will leave you with that. I'm on the way for my walk right now. Bid everyone a wonderful day. Hope that was easy listening and helpful. And remember, it's very simple with health. There's so much complicated information out there designed to make our head spins and for us to spend heaps of money. But when it really comes down to it, it's about less intoxing and more elimination. So making sure you're using the loo every day, eating high quality foods, taking in less deleterious foods. And it's gonna be a certain point where you're doing all this and you feel so good that you're not even going to crave those things that you used to crave for, quote, energy or comfort, because you're going to feel so good living this new life. And of course, if anyone wants any further assistance with this, you can email me at truthasrising@protonmail.com to set up a consultation. I can get you on your way in a personalized, customized way. All right, everybody, be well, and until next time, happy Easter Ostara to everyone too. Okay, Sat Nam.